Hello everyone, Darlene here. The subject I chose for this project is factors that fuel America's opioid epidemic. Opioids are a class of drugs that act on the opioid receptors in our brain. Some of these drugs are naturally derived while others are synthetic or semi-synthetic. Examples of opioids include heroin, morphine, oxycodone, hydrocodone, codeine, methadone, and fentanyl. When these drugs bind to the opioid receptors in our brain, a few things happen. Pain messages sent from the body to the brain are blocked, and dopamine is released, resulting in a feeling of pleasure. That doesn't sound too bad, right? Unfortunately, these drugs also slow down breathing. If too much of the drug is taken, the results could lead to a fatal overdose. These drugs also pose some public health threats, such as the spread of diseases like HIV, hepatitis B, and hepatitis C due to intravenous use. So how many people is this epidemic really affecting in our country? According to the CDC, more than 350,000 people have died from an overdose involving an opioid between the years 1999 and 2016. These numbers have significantly increased over time. In 2016, the number of opioid-related overdose deaths was 5 times higher than in 1999. Currently, an average of 115 Americans die every day from an opioid-related overdose. So what factors have led to this dramatic increase? The first I would like to focus on is the increase of prescription opioid pain relievers being prescribed. In 1980, the New England Journal of Medicine published a journal suggesting that addiction was rare in patients using prescription opioids. The research this journal was based on was a select group of hospitalized patients. Purdue Pharma used this research in their marketing campaigns for the new drug OxyContin that was released in 1996. So the difference here is that users of OxyContin were chronic pain sufferers, not hospitalized patients. This was a massive market for Purdue, as back pain patients alone numbered 35 million people. At the same time, there's a change in views within the medical community. Pain is now thought to be undertreated, and doctors are pushed to treat pain more liberally, even referring to pain as a fifth vital sign. This timing led to a huge success for Purdue Pharma. OxyContin prescriptions rose from 670,000 in 1997 to 6.2 million in 2002. Sales exceeded $1 billion in both 2001 and 2002. It didn't take long for others to recognize the opportunity for capital gain and take advantage of the market. Pill mills began to pop up. Here, doctors prescribe large quantities of narcotic painkillers to the public with minimal physical examination in exchange for cash payment. These pill mills significantly contributed to the rise in opioid addiction, particularly in southern Ohio and bordering states. They provided a steady supply of cheap narcotics for years to come, even leading to a type of currency of its own. Pills were used like cash to pay for goods and services in the area surrounding these pill mills. One of the major issues in regards to opioid addiction is a growing tolerance. Individuals addicted to the molecule find themselves searching for a stronger and stronger hit. It didn't take much time for opioid users to figure out how to remove the time-release capsule from OxyContin and either snort or inject the contents, producing a stronger high. After one injects these drugs, the fear of using needles is lost, and the switch to heroin is made much easier. While pill mills were flourishing, a new breed of heroin dealers were spreading across the states. The Jalisco Boys sold heroin in a convenient manner to users. Their black tar heroin was stronger than anyone had ever seen before and much cheaper than prescription drugs. They see opportunity in pill addicts and move into promised areas to distribute their product. Overdoses soared, revealing a new class of heroin addicts. Heroin use and addiction spread across the suburban youth of our country. These were the children of doctors and politicians. This led to a change in public attitude regarding those suffering with addiction. Addicts, once seen as having moral flaws, were now looked at as victims suffering with a disease. Our country began truly fighting back against this epidemic. Drug manufacturers such as Purdue Pharma were sued by the government in liability lawsuits. In one suit, Purdue was ordered to pay $24 million over a period of 8 years to be spent on substance use treatment in Kentucky. The distributor Cardinal Health was ordered to pay $20 million to the state of West Virginia for reasons including failing to diligently respond to suspicious orders and reaping unjust enrichment while the state expended substantial resources on the prescription opioid epidemic. Pill mills were shut down and prescription drug monitoring programs were put into place. Yet, according to the CDC, despite the recent decrease from the 2010 peak, the number of opioids prescribed in the U.S. in 2015 remained approximately 3 times as high as in 1999. In order to get a closer look at the impact opioid addiction has had on users and their families, I interviewed my sister. She does not use any substances herself, but her partner of 10 years has been using opioids for about 8 years. They have 3 kids together. She could not make an in-person interview, so I will discuss some of her responses. When asked what her feelings were regarding America's drug-taking culture, she responded that while some drugs are necessary, our society's view on drugs is too relaxed. In response to whether our drug-taking culture is more beneficial or harmful to society, she said it is more beneficial because people like her mom, a diabetic, and her daughter, who has asthma, need certain drugs to live. The next question I asked is whether or not she believed treating chronic pain with opioids is more beneficial or harmful to our society. She again believed that treatment is more beneficial, citing our mother's use of them. Our mother has had 3 back surgeries and a total knee replacement. Without the use of prescription opioids, she wouldn't be able to do many activities at all. When asked how her partner's opioid use impacts her life, she stated that it makes everything more difficult. He can't keep a job for more than a few weeks, so she has to support their family. And most days, he can't even move from bed to watch the children, so she's responsible for all the child care as well. She wants to go back to school but doesn't have the time to, and while she loves him, she feels stuck and doesn't know how to make things better. This is a life and a feeling we know all too well. As our father is or was an addict, we have not spoken to him in over a year. Despite our attempts to save his house, it was boarded up by the city for being unfit for human habitation. The last contact we had was from a social worker, as he had left his shelter for homeless seniors that he was living at the time, and she was looking for him. We have no way of knowing where he has gone or how his health is. He has had prior instances of overdosing and needing emergency naloxone. Our father wasn't always this way. As children, he drank a lot, but it wasn't until we were older that he began using drugs, eventually leading to a heroin addiction. It could have just been my age, but I never remember anyone pushing my dad to seek treatment. I never saw him sober. It's like our family just accepted how he was, and it wasn't going to change, so they just ignored it. And now I wonder if treatment was more openly talked about, whether the outcome could have been different. I think as a society, we need to fight back against this epidemic, and we need to talk. Treatment shouldn't be a dirty word. We have to recognize when someone we care about has a problem and provide them with support and getting help. We also have to fight back against the stigma so that individuals feel more comfortable asking for help. Education should be used in preventative efforts. We need to teach safe medication taking practices and provide factual information regarding drugs. Lastly, science-based harm reduction strategies should be used in order to save as many lives as we can. We must understand that abstinence is not an attainable goal for everyone. Medication-assisted treatment and clean needle exchange programs should be implemented. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast. Thank you for listening.